As the church bells chime, it's Martin Zender coming to you live from Windber, Pennsylvania. I don't know if you can hear the church bells in the background. The window's open here. Clyde Lynn Pilkington, this is his bedroom slash studio. He's got the little fan screen thing in place. It's a big hassle to put the window down, so I'm going to leave it up. And so you may hear the pealing of church bells, which to me, pealing does not necessarily translate to appealing. Hear that? I don't know if you did or not. Anyway, this is Martin Zender. Hi, everybody. We're going to talk about being alone. It's tough to be alone. It really is. I don't like being alone. It's not good for a man to be alone. We're not talking about my issues now. Okay, sorry. I used to think I liked being alone, but I don't. I like to be with people. In fact, at the airport, I was wanting to call a friend, and I usually hang out against a wall. I like to stand when I'm in airports because you're sitting for hours on the plane. And I go to the main intersection because I want to see the people. I want to be where the action is. Everybody wants to go to the hot spot. Well, not everybody. I do. I like it. So it's inherently desirous to be with other people. We are social creatures. Why? Because God was a social, was and is a social creature. God desires fellowship. But that church bell's bugging me. It's distracting me. I can't close the frickin' wall. I got to figure out how to do that. God desired fellowship, which is why he created Christ, which is why he created the entire universe. He wants creatures to share his glory and his love with. He was alone. God was all in himself at the beginning, if you want to put it that way, quote unquote, beginning of the universe. Of course, God had no beginning. I used to tell my kids that God had no beginning. They used to scream and jump up and down on the bed. They were 21 at the time. No, they weren't. They were kids like 5, 6, 7 years old. What do you mean God had no beginning? Boing, boing, boing. It was so frustrating to them. All they could do is hop on the bed and throw pillows. I said, I don't know. We can't grasp it. But God created Christ, and then through Christ came the rest of creation, because God longs for fellowship. That's why we long for fellowship. That's why men long for women, and women long for men, and husbands and wives long for their children, and we long for community, and we go to the mall or the movie theater, and some of us, God help us, even go bowling together. I don't understand that one, but I hear that it happens. Now, listen to Paul. Demas has forsaken me. He loved this present eon, departed, went to Thessalonica. We've been running through this a few times. 2 Timothy 4, 10 and verse 11. Titus went to Dalmatia, Crescens to Galatia. Only Luke is with me. Timothy and Paul, both of them, they had lonely stands. And you will find that in this walk. There will be times when you are lonely. And I'm not saying you don't desire fellowship. Paul did too. But the trial of loneliness comes, and what do we do with it? What do we do with it? We stand up under it. There's a lot of spiritual benefit to be had by standing alone, or being able to stand alone, or having periods, having seasons in your life when you stand alone. Paul and Timothy, again, lonely stands. Timothy was in Asia, where all had turned away from Paul. Paul was in Rome, where only Luke was with him. 2 Timothy 4:11. Demas forsook Paul because he loved the present eon, 2 Timothy 4:10. Does this mean they forsook Paul for what is often called worldliness? That they went and joined a fitness club in Caesarea? No, it doesn't necessarily mean that. It's often viewed that way, but it's what is it about this present age that made these people forsake Paul? There are different theories, but here's one of them. Since the context of the entire book of 2 Timothy is about religious apostasy, spiritual apostasy, it stands to reason that the abandonment of Paul was for the baubles, the attractions of religion, for a religious age offers religious attractions. And it was an abandonment of the loneliness of walking this walk for the religious course that is people, the fellowship. And that's the whole thing with church, isn't it? Why do you people go to church? I just want fellowship. I want to be with other people. I like the social aspects, and I understand that. But when you have to compromise spirituality, a spiritual truth, when you have to compromise your stand on facts concerning God and Christ, then how can you? I just don't know how you can compromise that for company. Join a bowling league, join a chess club, go to a knitting bee. What do they call those? Knitting bees? Crochet bees? Sweater bees? I don't know. Some, they have a bunch of bees where they get together and make stuff with yarn and stuff. I don't know. Do that! Why do you have to compromise the truth. Five men are specifically listed by name who had remained faithful. So what this boils down to is you can count these people on one hand. There was, of course, Paul and Luke, who was with him. We had these two. Then there was Timothy, and Mark was with him. Paul mentions Mark in 2 Timothy 4:11, and good old Tychicus, 2 Timothy 4:12. Now, the situation Paul faced was so bleak that when he first went to trial in Rome in front of the authorities, when you really want company, not one single person stood with him. He stood there all alone. That would be horrendous. Paul writes in 2 Timothy 4:16, "At my first answer, at my first court appearance, no man stood with me, but all forsook me. I pray God it may not be laid to their charge." So Paul wasn't the first man of God, the first one of God's servants to stand alone. Listen to this from Marion H. Reynolds. She wrote this article called Standing Alone in Foundation Magazine. She says, "It is human to stand with a crowd. It is divine to stand alone. It is manlike to follow the people, to drift with the tide, but it is godlike to follow a principle, to stem the tide." Where do we lay? That's the end of the quote. Where do we lay? That's my question. Do we drift with the tide? That's manlike. That's humanity. To be with the tide, no matter where the tide goes. You follow somebody off the bridge, as they say. Well, would you follow that guy if he went off the bridge? Well, many in religion are following their pastors and their teachers off the bridge of Aeonian life. But it is godlike to follow a principle no matter how few people are there with you. Do you have the wherewithal, the guts, the spiritual conviction to stand alone with Paul, with Timothy, with Tychicus, with Mark, with Luke? These are our people. And now you are my people. I'm your people. There are few of us. And I know we're scattered all over the place, scattered all over the globe. And it's rare when we get together. It's a wonderful thing. That's why these folks are organizing conferences. Got one coming up in New York, by the way. And we got one coming up in Birmingham, Alabama. I'll be telling you more of that real soon, because the conference near Rochester, New York, in Seneca Falls is coming up in about a week and a half. Let me finish this quote here from Marion Reynolds. "It is natural to compromise conscience and follow the social and religious fashion for the sake of gain or pleasure. It is divine to sacrifice both on the altar of truth and duty." I want to read that again because I love that. I live this way. Listen to this. "It is natural to compromise conscience and follow the social and religious fashion for the sake of gain or pleasure." Gain or pleasure. Personal gain, personal pleasure. Few people like to gut it out on the road less traveled. "It is divine, however, to sacrifice both gain and pleasure on the altar of truth and duty," unquote. Here's Paul again. "No man stood with me, all men forsook me." 2 Timothy 4:6. "I learned how to be alone in 1980 on my transcontinental bicycle ride." I took a bicycle ride across the United States in 1980 from Los Angeles to Boston, and I learned to be alone. I learned to be content and to be satisfied and to find sustenance with my own company. Although I got to admit, by the time I got to Northern Ontario, my route took me from Detroit, the north shore of Lake Erie, into Buffalo. By the time I got there, I was talking to the cows. I really missed fellowship. I missed my friends. But there's something about being able to put your head down and gut out those miles just to pedal and pedal and pedal all day. And that's all I had to do all day. That was my job for 8 hours a day, to pedal a bicycle. And I went 80 miles a day. That was my average. Although one day in Iowa, somebody told me Iowa was flat. Boy, was that fiction. Iowa was hilly. And I went across Iowa on Route 30. The whole way across. I remember one day 150 miles across Iowa. But there's something about knowing that you're at home in your own company and you can follow your convictions no matter where it took you. My conviction that summer of 1980 was to bicycle from the Pacific Ocean to the Atlantic Ocean, and nothing was going to dissuade me, and I did that. And I'm glad I did that. God brought that event into my life because I find such an amazing parallel now with this walk. This walk is in its own way quite lonely, although God gives respite, He gives people, He gives fellowship. That's why I'm traveling all over the place. And yet in those quiet moments, in those moments where you got nobody else, you find out who you are and you realize that, yes, I am willing and able to follow this course no matter where it takes me. But then God, in His mercy, does give us fellow travelers. No, not a communist here, but I like that term, fellow travelers on this weary, lonely path. Look at some of the examples of those who traveled alone. Noah traveled alone. Well, he had seven other members of his family. Thank God for him. Lucky guy, seven whole people. Wow. But imagine how alone those eight people were on the planet, full of mocking, partying, marrying, giving in marriage, eating, drinking, doing their own thing. And here Noah is carrying this truth, carrying this vision, and he's a weirdo, and yet he walks the walk. It took him around 100 years to build the ark because the dude lived a long time. But can you imagine? Only your family knows what you're doing. Some of you, I know, you don't even have your family who know what you're doing, and you're alone within your family. Have you ever been in a crowd of people, like in a city, and felt alone? Man, I felt that at the airport yesterday coming home. I was so alone. I was lonely for a woman to travel with me, and I was in an airport full of hundreds, thousands of people, and feeling very alone. So that can happen. And I called some friends and found some comfort and some respite. But imagine Noah and his wife and his three sons and their wives, and they're the only people who get it. I think we're assuming Noah's wife and his sons got it. Maybe only Noah got it, and they just went along with crazy old dad. I don't know if that's the case or not. You know, it could have been that only Noah received the vision. Only he was spoken to by God, and the rest of them just went by faith, not perception, thinking, well, we don't trust this Noah, but we do trust God, and we trust that our Father has heard from God. So there's Noah fairly voyaging alone. Daniel dined and prayed alone. Elijah sacrificed and witnessed alone. Jeremiah prophesied and wept alone. Jesus loved and He died alone. And yet they weren't alone, were they? Paul was alone, we say. And yet Luke only is with me. So thank God for the company God does give us. I'm going to speak more about this tomorrow, God willing. This is a huge theme because we find that when we embrace the truth, fewer and fewer people follow us there. But that's okay. There's a good precedence for being alone. We have Noah, we have our Lord, we have Paul. The day is going to come, the day when we're presented before the universe, when we are not only not going to be alone, we are going to be surrounded by an innumerable celestial host, and we are going to be lauded before the universe as sons and daughters of God. This is a training ground to help us understand the loneliness of other beings, the estrangement of other beings. Everything we're going through now will have pertinence. It will matter in the next life. You got to trust that. Believe me, I'm preaching to myself while I'm preaching to you.